he thunders. Right here? Dean, turn around. He has the decency to obey her, but sounds utterly furious as he snarls. Get your shit together and meet me in the living room. I'm walking past you guys right now and I'm not looking, okay? Jesus, fuck, I'm not looking. My peripheral vision catches him stalking by, holding one hand to his face as a blinder. The moment he disappears, we snap into action. I pull out, Summer takes the condom and ducks into the nearby powder room. A toilet flushes and then she returns and we reluctantly walk into the living room like two teenagers who just got caught having sex. Yep, exactly like that. When we're seated on the couch, Dean looms over us, arms crossed. How long has this been going on? He asks sternly. I choke down a laugh. Hearing Dean, whose nickname in college was Dean the Sex Machine for Christ's sake, put on a Puritan tone and glare in disapproval is the ultimate irony. But I know this whole Big Brother posturing is coming from a place of genuine concern. He adores his sister. A while, Summer admits. Uh-huh. He scowls at her. Oh, and a heads up. Next time you're trying to hide something from me, maybe don't post a pic on social media. She rolls her eyes. I wasn't trying to hide it from you. He's outraged. So you wanted me to find out on social media? No, you didn't even cross my mind. Fitzy and I went to a party. I took a picture of us together. I posted it on Insta. Nowhere in that chain of events did I think about you. Want to know why? Because it had nothing to do with you. It has everything to do with me. He fires back. Ah, now I know where she gets the drama llama from. Dean's murderous glare whips toward me. This is my little sister, man. I know, I answer calmly, and I care about her a lot. Yeah, Dickie, Summer chimes in, this isn't just sex between us, okay? I mean, we are having sex, lots of it, but... Dean drops his head in his hands. Why, boogers, why do you have to say stuff like that? She huffs. So you're allowed to talk about your sex life with me, but I can't talk about mine with you. I never talk about my sex life with you. It's a taboo topic. Taboo! He lets out a groan thick with aggravation. Then he inhales slowly. His gaze shifts between us. That's it. You guys are together now? I look at Summer, who 15 minutes ago was threatening to break up with me. No, not even threatening. She did break up with me. I just wouldn't allow it. Her mouth hitches up in a rueful smile. We're together, she confirms. Colin is my boyfriend. I bite the inside of my cheek to keep from laughing. The resignation in her tone is kinda adorable. Dean gives a slow nod as he carefully studies my face. So you're with my sister. You're my sister's boyfriend. He sounds as resigned as Summer. I swallow a sigh because I know exactly where this is going. Yes. Okay then. He rakes one hand through his blonde hair. You ready? My sigh slips out. Let's get it over with. Summer's head swivels from me to Dean, confusion swimming in her expression. What are you guys talking about? Dean gets to his feet. So do I. Sorry, boogers. It needs to be done. Needs to be done. I echo guiltily. When Dean cracks the knuckles of his right hand, understanding dawns in his sister's eyes. You're going to hit him? She exclaims, jumping to her feet. What the hell? No way! Fitz knows the code. He didn't follow it, therefore. Dean's right. There is a code. Other teams might have rules about not dating a teammate's sister or ex or whoever else is off limits, but our team never strictly adhered to anything like that. Our rule was much simpler. Ask before you go there. Even if the other guy says hell no, you could probably do what you want anyway, since there's no way for him to enforce anything. But that's not what the code is about. It's about respecting your teammate. Dean cracks the knuckles of his left hand. You're insane. Don't you touch him, Dickie. She tries to throw herself between us, but I gently move her to the side. Just let it happen, I tell her. It's really not a big deal. The fucker doesn't throw a punch. He knees me in the balls. I drop like a stone, stars flashing in my field of vision as the pain twists my gut. I curl over and grip my junk, trying to catch my breath.
Jackass!
I croak, staring accusingly up at Dean.
Dickie, why would you go for his balls? We need them to make your future nieces and nephews.
Nieces and nephews, plural. How many kids are you planning on having? A lot. You're not allowed to get pregnant until you're at least 30. I'm not ready to be an uncle. Oh my God, life isn't always about you. They stand there bickering as if I'm not bent in half on the marble floor, gasping for air. I'm not having kids with you. I wheeze at Summer. I don't want to be part of your insane family.
Oh, hush, sweetie, it's too late. I've become attached.
You'd think it would be impossible to laugh while I'm writhing on the floor in agony. But Summer Hayward De Laurentiis makes everything possible.
30. Summer. My last check-in with Eric Laurie takes place the Monday before the fashion show. I would have liked to talk to him after our history of fashion lecture this morning, but he had a line of students waiting to speak to him, so I killed 2 hours on campus and then walked over to his office during his official hours. I hate meeting in his office. I find he's always extra smarmy behind closed doors. He's already winked about 4 times, made 1 flirty comment about how I should walk in my own show, and now his hand grazes mine, intentionally, I suspect, as he passes me the schedule for Friday night. It's the equivalent of a band's set list, with the names of each student designer in the order in which they'll be debuting their lines. A glance at the schedule reveals that Summer Lovin is opening the show. Crap. I would have preferred to be somewhere in the middle of the pack. Opening a show is a lot of pressure.
I want us to start the night with a bang, he tells me, winking again. Your swimsuits will do that, I suspect.
Ew. Why does he say things like that? Paired with the sleazy wink, his words make my skin crawl. Whatever you think is best. I paste on a cheerful smile. So we're all set? I want nothing more than to leave this man's office. He smiles back.
All set.
Relief floods my belly. I hop to my feet and pick up my Prada tote. My head is down as I tuck the schedule into my bag so I don't see Laurie round his desk. When I lift my head, he's standing about 1 foot away from me, which is 1 foot too close. I hastily take a step back. Anyway, I'll see you Wednesday. We're having another lecture this week so he can return our midterms and discuss the final paper. I'm excited to get my midterm.
How long are we going to keep fighting this?
I blink and he's no longer 1 foot away. It's a mere inch now, and his long fingers are caressing my cheek, unleashing a flurry of shivers. And not the good kind. I'm too stunned to push his hand away, and my brain is still stuck on the throaty question he'd voiced. Keep fighting this? Is he for real? Does he think his pervy feelings are reciprocated? That we've been engaged in some forbidden love affair this entire semester?
Summer,
he says thickly, and I don't miss the flare of passion in his eyes. I gulp, hard, and then I lick my lips because they're suddenly so dry that they're sticking together, and I need them to unstick if I'm going to get any words out. Only Laurie mistakes the lip licking for a green light. To my horror, his head dips toward me, his mouth nearly landing on mine before I plant both hands on his chest and forcibly push him away. I'm sorry, I blurt out. I don't know what you think is going on here, but... My hands shake wildly as I shove my purse strap over my shoulder. I have a boyfriend. And even if I didn't, I wouldn't kiss you if my life depended on it, you sleazy slime bag. Hear, hear, Selena agrees. Laurie smooths out the lapel of his pinstriped blazer.
I see,
he says tightly. Yeah, I'm sorry. Why am I apologizing? I take a breath and remind myself that I have nothing to be sorry for, and that I shouldn't have to use a boyfriend as an excuse. But even if my boyfriend wasn't in the picture, I still wouldn't be interested. It would be inappropriate. Stop it, Summer. Again, with the excuses? Anger builds in my gut. Why do we do this as women? Why do we feel the need to justify why we don't like someone? I'm also not interested in you that way. I finish firmly. There. No more excuses. His jaw clamps tight. His eyes burn with something I can't decipher. It's not quite anger. Definitely not hurt or shame. I think it might be betrayal.
I'm sorry if I led you to believe otherwise, I add, even though I'm confident I didn't send him any signals to indicate I wanted him sexually. One eyebrow arches slightly.
Are you done?
He asks in a tone cold enough to refreeze the snow that's recently begun to melt beyond his windows. I guess so, I mutter.
Then I'll see you in class, Summer.
I leave the office and the door shuts behind me. Not a slam, but he definitely closes it harder than necessary. I stand in the hallway for a moment, stunned by what just happened. I snap out of my trance when my phone vibrates with an incoming text. Fitz, at the computer lab working on code. Break time. Wanna meet for lunch? Me. Sorry, BB. About to walk into meeting with my advisor. See you at home? XOXO. I'm not sure why I lie to him. I just don't think I can see him while my stomach continues to burn with humiliation. I'm suddenly questioning every discussion in class when Lori would nod in agreement at something I'd said or praise me for a particular observation. Was it all bullshit? Just him pretending that he found me intelligent and insightful so he could get into my pants? Of course he was pretending, you idiot. On what planet does any professor think you're intelligent? I bite my lip to keep from crying. I want to tell my inner critic to fuck off. But I'm too distraught. And there's no way I'm telling Fitz what happened. He'll lose his shit if he finds out Lori tried to kiss me. He'll probably hunt the professor down and try to throw down. And that won't help the situation in the slightest. It's over now. Lori made a move. I turned him down. I'll tell Fitz about it eventually. Right now, I want to forget it ever happened. But that's easier said than done, especially when it becomes apparent that Lori doesn't want me to forget. When he strides into the lecture hall on Wednesday, his gaze seeks out mine almost immediately, and the ice in his eyes sends a chill up my spine. Then he breaks the eye contact and greets the rest of the class with a broad smile. Guess what day it is, boys and girls? Titters ripple through the room, mostly from the females. In the row ahead of me, Nora whispers something to one of her friends, and they both giggle. She's actually backed off these past few weeks, her dirty looks and combative remarks slowly abating. I think she's accepted that I'm Lori's pet, and that no amount of Chanel bashing is going to make him hate me. I should give her a heads up that all it takes to invite Eric Lori's hatred is not allowing him to shove his tongue in your mouth.
As you know, I'll be returning your midterms today.
There are excited whispers, intermingled with some groans and worried voices.
Don't worry. For the most part, you all turned in some excellent work. Many interesting papers in the bunch, Ms. Ridgway. Yours in particular was a fascinating read.
Nora's head snaps up in shock. This is the first time he singled her out to praise her. I can't see her face, but I imagine she's probably blushing happily.
With that said, he continues, I did notice that some of you had issues with the basic tenets of essay writing, such as how to correctly cite a source or organize a paragraph. I thought perhaps a tutorial is in order.
He snaps open his briefcase and removes a laptop that he sets up on the table near his lecture podium.
Now, I found that sometimes, in order to teach a student how to do something correctly, it's useful to show them what an incorrect version looks like. So we're going to dissect two papers, each of which earned a D-, and we're going to examine why that was.
He winks.
Don't worry. These are midterms from a fashion history course I taught at UCLA a couple of years ago. I tend to reuse the same essay topics. I blame laziness.
That gets him more laughs. He bends over his computer.
Let's start with this paper on the evolution of New York fashion.
I freeze. That's got to be a coincidence, right? He just said he tends to assign the same topics. Anxiety roils in my stomach as I wait for the essay to appear on the projection screen. And then it does. And the sick feeling shoots up to my throat, and I almost choke on bile. A
cover page fills the screen for about half a second before Lori quickly scrolls to the first page. But half a second is all it takes for me to make out my name on the cover sheet. The date underneath clearly indicates it was written and submitted this semester. UCLA my ass! And I'm not the only one who caught it. Ben, my bushy-eyebrowed roommate, shoots me a weird look. Nora twists around to frown at me before facing the front again. As you can see, the student had many issues with basic essay structure. Take a look at her thesis. She's very clearly told us what she plans to discuss in the essay and in what order. And yet the paragraph that follows doesn't follow this blueprint. And on he drones, picking apart the paper I'd spent the last 2 months slaving over, crying over. My cheeks get hotter and hotter with each passing second. My stomach gets queasier and queasier. My classmates saw my name on that cover page, or at least most of them did. They know I wrote it. Lori did this on purpose, and he's winking and smirking and having a friggin' ball down there as he dissects my work. As you can see, the student had all the bones, but none of the meat, if you will. Nora snickers. Ben gives me a sympathetic look. I desperately try not to cry. I glue my gaze to my hands, which are clasped in my lap. I don't want Lori to know how close I am to tears. I refuse to let him see that his humiliation ploy worked. The smug bastard is now pointing out a spelling error I'd missed when I was proofreading. Fitz missed it, too. This isn't kindergarten. This is an Ivy League university. Spelling matters, children. I shoot to my feet. I'm done. I've had enough. My hands shake like branches in a windstorm as I gather up my stuff and hurry to the aisle. Lori is still talking when I push open the doors and flee the lecture hall. I'm halfway down the hall when someone calls my name. Summer, wait. Ben rushes over to me, concern etched into his face. Are you all right? Not really, I gulp repeatedly, once again trying to suppress the tears. That's really fucking shady what Lori's doing in there, Ben says flatly. Tell me about it. You need to report this to the department head. And say what? I ask in a sardonic tone. Hey, I got a D- on my midterm? Fire the professor? No, but you can tell them that he humiliated you in front of your peers and implied that you're an incompetent writer and... I'm sorry, I cut in, because I'm barely holding on by a thread here. But I have to go. Summer. Ben, please, just drop this. I gesture to the doors. Go back inside and wait for your midterm. I bet you did great. Summer. He shakes his head angrily. This isn't fair. Life isn't fair. My voice cracks. But I appreciate you coming out here to check on me. I really do. You're a good guy, Ben. Thank you. I squeeze his arm and then walk away. At home, I find Fitz at his desk. He's wearing his headphones and tapping on the game controller that plugs into his computer. Or I think it plugs into it. I don't really understand his gaming system. He tried to explain it to me once, but I've already forgotten. I pluck his earphones off, causing a startled Fitz to swivel in his padded chair. Fuck, you scared me, babe. When he sees the look on my face, concern fills his eyes. What's wrong? I inhale a slow, even breath. I need to ask you something, and you have to promise to be honest with me. Okay. His expression grows wary. Was my essay a piece of shit? What? He scrapes both hands over his face, clearly confused. You mean the fashion essay? About New York in the first half of the 20th century? I nod. You told me I did a good job on it, I say shakily. You did a great job. I search his expression and find nothing deceitful about it, and his voice is nothing but sincere. Do you really believe that? Or are you only saying it because we're dating? Summer, if I thought your midterm sucked, or that something about it was highly problematic, I would have told you, he says firmly, and I would have offered to help you fix it. I don't see the point in lying about stuff like that. I sink onto the edge of his bed. Once again, my eyes begin stinging.
But this time I can't control a few teardrops from popping out and sliding down my cheeks. Fitz is on his feet in a heartbeat. He kneels in front of me and places his big hands on my thighs. Talk to me. He urges thickly. What's going on? I got a D-minus on the midterm. That startles him.
For real?
I nod slowly. The surprise on his face slowly transforms into skepticism, but that's practically a fail. I know, I moan, and as the tears continue to fall, I tell him everything that happened in class today, and then since I'm already confessing humiliating things, I also reveal what happened in Lori's office. Fitz's eyes blaze, that motherfucker. And now he's punishing you because you didn't want to sleep with him? I swipe at my wet eyes. I don't know. Maybe I really did deserve a D. Bullshit! That was not a D paper, Summer. I'm sorry. I don't claim to be some writing essay genius, but if I were a TA, I would have given you a B. Maybe a B minus if I was being nitpicky about grammar, or a C if I was just in a bad mood that day. But a D minus is total bull. He's absolutely punishing you. He angrily shakes his head. You need to appeal the grade. His confidence in my midterm dries my tears. Can I do that? I'm not sure how the fashion department does it, but there's definitely an appeal process at this college, and you need to take advantage of it. He cups my cheeks with both hands, sweeping his thumbs over my jawline. You can't let him get away with this. You do not deserve that grade, babe. But what if you do? My inner critic counters. You're not exactly the brightest bulb in the... Shut up, I interrupt, mentally bitch-slapping the negative part of my brain that's been tormenting me for years. Just shut up. I'm not going to listen to the critic. I'm going to listen to Fitz, who sounds so adamant that I did a good job on the paper. And his faith in me steals the breath from my lungs. I throw my arms around him and hug him tightly. I love you, I whisper. You make me feel... I pause to think it over. Smart. His husky laughter tickles the top of my head. Smart, huh? He runs his hands up and down my back before tightening his hold on me. Yes. I smile against the warm column of his neck, breathing in his familiar masculine scent. I didn't appeal the plagiarism paper at Brown because I thought nobody would believe that I didn't intentionally cheat. But I should have done it. I didn't deserve to fail. I deserved extra help. I steel my jaw. Because I have a learning disorder. I tip my head to find Fitz gazing at me with pride in his eyes. I'm not stupid, I tell him. And for once, my inner critic remains silent. I just learned differently. I worked my ass off on that midterm, and maybe there were a few run-on sentences and a paragraph or two that I could have rearranged, and fine, there was one spelling error, but come on! Do you expect me to believe that not a single other person in the class had so much as a typo? I jut my chin. I'm appealing this shit! Damn right you are. Lori can eat a dick. Damn right he can. I run my fingers over the stubble dotting his strong jaw. Thank you for making me feel better about this. Hey, it's my job as your boyfriend to make you feel better. Fitz's lips brush over mine in a reassuring kiss. Don't worry, babe. You're going to appeal the grade, and the college will overturn it, because it'll be clear that Lori is a vengeful asshole. It's going to be fine. He kisses me again. I promise.
31. Fitz. Due to a scheduling conflict with the Arbor House, our venue in Hastings, tomorrow's junior fashion show will now be held at 7 p.m. rather than 9 p.m. We apologize to ticket holders for any inconvenience this may cause.
Can you frigging believe this?
Rage twists Summer's beautiful features into something dark and primal. She looks as if she's prepared to drive to Eric Lori's home and strangle him with her bare hands. I don't blame her.
A scheduling conflict?
She screeches.
The day before the event. He did this on purpose. He's trying to fuck me, literally and figuratively.
I don't laugh because I'm furious on her behalf. When she'd emailed Lori reminding him that half her models won't be available until this earlier show is well underway, she'd gotten a cold response stating that she'd simply have to redo the independent study next year. which is a slap in the face after she'd worked her ass off all semester. Are you sure he knew that Rex and the guys wouldn't be available until 8?
He knew,
she says tightly. I mentioned it several times during our check-ins. He wanted me to open the show, and I told him I'd prefer a later slot to give the football guys time to regroup after their retreat. Plus, it's a lot of pressure to go first. Can you go over his head? I ask.
To who? My academic advisor? Richmond can't stand me, and he's in love with Lori.
Maybe he'll see reason. It's not like you didn't do any of the work. You still have 6 models.
I told all this to Lori,
she reminds me. She tosses me her phone. I read over their email exchange again. After his rude reply, Summer pleaded her case, saying she has 6 models ready to walk in the show and asking if she could simply not show the men's line. Lori tells her that either all 12 models need to be there or none of them. He once again reiterates that she will need to repeat the independent study. Spiteful bastard.
What am I going to do?
Her expression is dismayed, but she's not crying, which tells me she hasn't admitted defeat yet. There's got to be a solution. You talk to Rex. There's no way they can make it back early.
Nope. Coach DeLuca has them on lockdown. Apparently this hippy-dippy retreat is in the middle of the woods, miles from civilization. The bus doesn't collect them until 5. They'll get back a couple hours after that.
I think it over. Okay. So we've got 6 dude bathing suits.
8. Rex and Lockett, we're going to walk twice.
But you only need 6 bodies.
Yes, but...
She shakes her head in frustration.
The suits are tailored for these bodies, that's why we had fittings.
But, I counter, we have their measurements and I'm sure we could find guys who generally fit those measurements.
Where are you going with this?
Yeah, where are you going with this? A little voice squawks. I exhale slowly. We'll do it. Her brows soar.
We?
Well, they, I amend. I'm going to recruit my teammates. I'm already swiping my phone off my desk. Hollis will definitely be on board. You know what a show-off he is. Hunter... I stop. No, Hunter's out. He's barely spoken a word to us in weeks. Nate, I can see saying yes. I scroll through my messages list. We need someone a bit slimmer to replace Lockett.
Jesse,
Summer suggests. If Katie lets him. I bypass Jesse's name and search for his girlfriends. Know what? I'll just text Katie directly. She wears the pants in that relationship.
True.
She purses her lips.
But who's going to fill in for Rex? Please don't get mad at me, but he's got a huge package.
I close my eyes briefly.
Seriously, no guy wants to hear his girlfriend say that, Summer.
I told you not to get mad.
She protests.
Anyway, don't worry. He's not much bigger than you. You're almost the same.
Her eyes light up like it's Christmas morning. No way. I growl, reading her mind. I'm recruiting for you, not volunteering as tribute. The thought of sashaying down a runway while a crowd of people stare at me makes me want to vomit.
Fine, then you'll need to poll your teammates about their penis sizes.
Try to find me a big one. I fight hard to contain my laughter. God, this girl. I'll see what I can do. I promise. The good thing about not having a game the following night is that, in theory, most of my teammates should be available. The bad thing about not having a game tonight is that nearly all of them already have plans. Half the guys went to a strip club in Boston, a few others don't pick up their phones, a couple of them consult their girlfriends, who say no fucking way. Katie, luckily, is not one of them. She loosens the reins and gives Jesse permission to do it. Hollis, as always, is more than happy to help. It took some arm-twisting to get Nate and Matt on board, until Summer promised that the after-party would be teeming with hot sorority girls. The French-Canadian on our team, Pierre, is a huge, hairy fellow who's about the same size as the huge, hairy tight end, Bibby. In 24 hours, I've scraped together 5 bodies. I've yet to find a replacement for Rex, he of the big package. In my desk chair, I glance down at my own crotch. I never thought I'd see the day where I'd be cursing the generous size of my cock, but I'm running out of both options and time. Summer left for the venue an hour ago to help with setup. She also signed up for cleanup, though apparently she agreed to this before Eric Lori tried to stick his tongue in her mouth. She emailed Lori this morning telling him she's found replacements for her male models. I desperately don't want to let her down, but I'm not sure who else to call. My gamer friends aren't exactly model material. Morris, Ray, Kenji, they're all short and scrawny, not to mention complete introverts. I'm scanning my brain for other candidates when my phone rings. Private caller. I waste no time answering because I'd told my friends that if they know anyone who'd be interested, to please pass my number along. But when I answer the call, I'm hit with a sense of deja vu.
Please hold for Kamal Jane.
Seriously? Why is he calling me? I haven't heard from him, nor wanted to, since our showdown at the Hayward Plaza last week. Colin! He barks in my ear. I hope I caught you at a good time. Would have called during business hours, but I was in meetings until 6. His rapid manner of speaking irritates me tonight. What do you need, Mr. Jane? I ask, unable to stop from being curt. We've been through this. Please call me KJ or... No, I interrupt. I'm not going through this song and dance again. Tell me what you want, otherwise I'm hanging up. Silence crashes over the line. I can't believe I just snapped at a billionaire. I don't think he can believe it either. But when he speaks again, his tone is completely stripped of its usual confidence. Colin, I'm sorry about the way I behaved at the fundraiser. He clears his throat. I insulted your girl and I was condescending to you. I regret my behavior. I almost fall out of my chair. He's apologizing? Now that I didn't expect. Sorry if I sound a bit rusty. I haven't issued an apology in... ever, maybe? People apologize to me, not the other way around, and to think I'm groveling to a jock who would have... Really? We're back to the jock bullshit? I sigh. There's a pause. Again, my apologies. I may be a bit biased when it comes to jocks. No shit. I didn't have the best experience with jocks in high school, he admits. Though I'm sure you already suspected that. With that said, I truly am sorry, kid. I was an ass, and truth be told, you impressed me that night. The other candidates nodded and agreed with every word I said. They sucked up to me and raved about how amazing I am. Don't get me wrong, I am amazing, but it gets old having people follow you around trying to suck your dick. You stood up to me, Colin, and more than that, you were immensely talented. I'm glad he's not here to see my jaw drop. So, his tone grows sheepish. If you're still interested in the position at Orcus Games, it's yours. My jaw is on the floor now. Yeah, I absolutely didn't expect this, and I have to admit I'm impressed that he was man enough to call me and apologize. But at the same time, I can't forget the way he treated Summer with such blatant disrespect. I'm not sure if one apology makes up for that. I told you I'm not interested in working for someone like you, I say brusquely. And I'm urging you to reconsider. I need someone like you on my team, kid, someone who challenges me, stands up to me. Someone to remind me that before I was an arrogant prick, I was a nerdy kid who loved video games. I hesitate for a moment. If you want me to reconsider, then you need to give me time to think about it, I finally say. Understandable. Take a few days, hell, a week, 2 weeks. But I require a firm answer by the end of the month. Fine. I'll get back to you. Anything else? I'm being rude again, but the fashion show starts soon, and Summer is more important to me than this, as he aptly described himself, arrogant prick. Just think it over, he cajoles. I said I would, and I meant it. I'll take the time to decide if working for Kamal is worth it for me, but if he expects me to jump through hoops for him again, he'll be sorely disappointed. There's only one person whose hoops I'll happily jump through, and she's not even asking me to. I'll be in touch, Mr. Jane. And then I sign off with a series of words that never in a million years would I have imagined myself saying. I've got to go walk the runway at my girlfriend's fashion show now.
32. Summer. That man really loves you.
I know, I answer Brenna, unable to fight a sappy grin.
We're standing backstage watching as my boyfriend walks the lengthy runway, bisecting the enormous ballroom of the Arbor House, a historic mansion in Hastings, and our venue for tonight. Fitz's swim briefs hug his perfect ass, and his thigh muscles ripple with power as his long strides eat up the runway. On the other side of the wings, Bianca and her Kappa sisters are also enjoying the show. Every time another half-naked hockey player steps onto the stage, they sigh dreamily.
The girls already strutted their stuff to thunderous applause. My bikinis were a hit, but the plunging one-piece Bianca closed the girls' line with was the clear winner of the night. Bianca catches me looking, and she gives an enthusiastic wave. I wave back with a smile. I didn't see Kaya in the audience tonight, which tells me she never ended up endorsing her sister's side project. But who cares? The Kappas came through for me, and I owe them for that. Beyond the curtains, Fitz reaches the end and does the turn like we'd practiced, albeit awkwardly. The people occupying the rows of seats on either side of the runway break out in applause, and my smile doubles in size. As I suspected, the briefs are a wee bit loose in the front, since Rex's rocket is slightly bigger than Fitzy's, but that's not to say my man doesn't fill out a pair of briefs fantastically. And besides, I honestly wouldn't have cared if half the swimsuits hadn't fit. I'm just thrilled we managed to find replacements for all six players. Someone else isn't as thrilled, though. Eric Laurie sits in the front row with the other members of the faculty, including Mallory Reyes, the department head. Laurie holds his program in his lap, fashionable as ever in a pinstripe suit, and with his hair slicked away from his high forehead and clean-shaven face. A face that's harder than stone as he stares at my model. Correction, at my boyfriend, who is so fucking hot it's almost otherworldly. Yep, no other way to describe the oiled-up, muscled, tattooed man putting himself on display for me. I want to go out there and bang him on the runway. I growl, in front of everybody. I don't even care. I don't blame you, Brenna answers. Look at that body. He's magnificent. He really is, and the relief on his face when he returns backstage is almost comical.
I feel like I'm going to Ralph, he groans.
I tamp down a laugh. You are so good, I assure him. But quick, we need to get Rex's trunks on because you're walking again after Nate. Each designer was given our own dressing space, sectioned off by a curtain, and I shove Fitz toward mine. His second swimsuit is nowhere near as skimpy as the first one. I saved the trunks for last, so he could be done with the awkward briefs right off the bat. Fitz scratches his bare chest, then remembers that Brenna and I rubbed oil all over the guys before the show started. His big paw is glistening now, and he bites his tongue seductively before saying, I'm all oily. Can you take these off for me? I roll my eyes. Oily hands in no way prevent you from taking your own briefs off. But I still hook my fingers under his elastic waistband, because what woman would ever say no to sliding what's essentially underwear off this hottie's body? I slip my hands under the briefs and squeeze his butt cheeks. His ass is so muscular, it's insane. Fitz's eyes flare. Don't do that, he warns. You'll make me hard. You're the one who wanted me to undress you. You're right. What was I thinking? He swats my hands away and drops trow on his own. I have one brief, glorious moment to admire his sweet penis before he has the trunks on and is tightening the drawstring.
How do I look?
He asks. Fuckable. I reach around to smack his ass. Now get back to work. He chuckles as I usher him out of the dressing space and get him in position. Nate walks off the runway, and Fitz steps onto it. But before he walks, he winks at me and murmurs, I wouldn't do this for just anybody, you know. I know, and I love you for it. Brenna sighs as he disappears. You two are so sappy. Yep, I own that, I grin at her. You still seen McCarthy? She's been very mum about her love life lately. She shrugs. Not really. He's in Boston, I'm in Hastings. I'm not going to make that much of an effort for a Harvard boy. What if it was Connolly? I counter. Would you make the trek to see him? What's with you and Connolly? She demands in exasperation. I swear you're obsessed with the guy. He's an arrogant ass, Summer. But he's so hot. Arrogant asses tend to be hot. That's how they become arrogant asses. Fitz returns with loud cheers in his wake, and I urge Hollis to get out there. He's closing my show, and he milks the finale for all he's worth, flexing his biceps as he plants his hands on his hips, showing off the hard ridges of his abs as he does his turn. And then my part is over, and the Kappa sisters are hugging me, and a few of my classmates congratulate me on a job well done.
Ben is up next, so my friends and I clear the wings for him and his models. Brenna and the Kappas go to sit in the audience while Fitz and the others change into their clothes. I thank each of them profusely for their help, and a pang of sadness tugs at my heart at Hunter's noticeable absence. Fitz and I agree it's best to give Hunter space, but it still sucks knowing I'd hurt him. When it's just Fitz and me, and he's wearing clothes, I grab the back of his head to tug his mouth to mine. "Thank you," I whisper against his lips. "You literally saved my life." "Well, not literally," he whispers back. "Literally," I argue, and his lips twitch in humor before covering mine again. Someone gasps from behind us, and we break apart to see Nora standing several feet away. At first, she's pale with shock, but then her lips twist in a nasty grimace, and she spits out, "I can't believe you, Fitz. That's who you were talking about? Her?" And then she stomps off, her pink-streaked black hair whipping as she spins around. I turn to him in confusion. "What did she mean? What you were talking about? When did you talk to her?"
"Right after we slept together for the first time," he said scruffly. "I told her I couldn't go out with her again because I started seeing somebody."
"Oh, you didn't mention that, to be honest. I forgot." I'd forgotten about Nora, too, at least in relation to Fitz. She's no longer a threat to me, although I do feel bad that she witnessed us kissing when I know she had a crush on him. "Do you, though?" inner Selena Gomez asks. I can tell she's trying not to stick her tongue out at me. Fine. Maybe I don't feel that bad.
"Should I go talk to her?" he says in concern.
Absolutely not, I say cheerfully. She's a big girl, and she'll get over it. The fashion show ends around 9:30, which was when it was scheduled to start before Lori decided that tearing apart my essay and embarrassing me in front of the class wasn't enough. But his attempt to sabotage me tonight failed, and I don't miss the anger in his eyes when Mallory Reyes pulls me aside at the Breyer-hosted after-party and raves about my designs. She can't get enough of the bohemian influence mingled with my modern glam style, and she says as much to Lori as he stands there glowering at me over her head. Come talk to me before the semester ends so we can brainstorm your work placement for your senior year. I have some ideas. She glances at Lori. I adore this girl's style, Eric. It's a lot of fun.
Very fun,
he agrees, but the unchecked anger in his eyes betrays his airy tone. I don't give a shit how much he hates me, though. The independent study is pass-fail, and there's no possible way he can fail me after Mallory spent the past 10 minutes gushing about my work. Even better, she's the one who'll be reviewing my midterm appeal once I begin the process. I have a feeling it's going to go in my favor. I excuse myself and do some mingling. Fitz stays by my side, looking less miserable than usual at having to attend a social function. He's evolving, my sweet penis man. I'm proud of him. His teammates take up residence at one of the two bars. Since the party is being hosted by the university's fine arts department, the bartenders aren't serving anyone without ID. But most of us are of age, and I sip a wine spritzer while Fitz drinks a beer, and we stand there watching the crowd for a bit. Brenna is on the other side of the room chatting with Hollis. They're laughing about something, and every time she throws her head back, I notice a spark of hope in his eyes. Poor Mike. One of these days he's going to have to accept that she's not interested in him. Fitz gets drawn into hockey talk with Nate and Matt, so I wander around and mingle some more. At one point, I bump into Nora and nearly complimented her on her show. Her punk rock-inspired dresses had been pretty incredible. But her eyes blaze the moment we collide, so I simply murmur an apology and keep walking. A bit later, I see her at the bar chatting with Lori, and her expression is drastically brighter. She's sipping on a pink cocktail, and he's holding a glass of red wine. He touches her arm, and then he winks and tweaks a strand of her black and pink hair. She giggles. Looks like Nora got her wish. She's finally the exclusive recipient of Lori's attention. Well, she can have the slimy bastard. Good riddance.
The party is winding down when my phone vibrates in the back pocket of my skinny jeans. I pull it out to find a text from Rex.
Rex, saw on Snapchat the hockey boys rocked it. Pissed, though. We wanted to do it.
Me, I know you did, sweetie.
Rex, still on for the after party, though? Got all these kegs here. Shame to waste them.
I walk back to the bar and address Fitz and the others. Are you down for the after-after party at Rex's?
Sure, Fitz says, although grudgingly, if you want to go.
Absolutely, I answer without delay. Daphne Kettleman will be there.
Why do you care about this chick so much?
He gives a resigned head shake. Because she's Daphne Kettleman. He scrubs his hands over his face.
Summer, I feel like I'm going to be saying this a lot, but I don't understand you.
Nate snickers. It's okay, babe. Not a lot of people do. I smack a kiss on his cheek. All right. Why don't you boys take off for now? We're starting cleanup soon, so I need to stay for that, but I'll meet you at the Elmhurst house once I'm done.
I can stay and help, Fitz offers.
You already helped enough. My tone is firm. Take Brenna and the Kappas and go to Rex's. I'll be there in an hour, tops.
I don't like the idea of leaving you here alone.
Pussy whipped!
Hollis coughs under his breath. I won't be alone, I tell Fitz. Ben and Nora, I make a face as I say her name, volunteered to clean up too.
Be nice, Fitz chides.
Hey, I'm nothing but nice to her. She's the one who acts like a bitch to me. I send Rex a message that the party is still a go, then slide my phone in my pocket. I'll text you when I'm on my way. 45 minutes later, Ben and I have stacked the last of the chairs, boxed up all the hangers, and decluttered as best as we could. Someone from the university is supposed to collect all this stuff in the morning and return it to the fashion department. I gesture to the raised runway in the center of the massive room. They don't expect us to take that apart, do they?
No. I think the crew's doing it when they come to pick up all the chairs and stuff.
Okay. Good. I check the time on my phone. You coming to the party? He rubs his fingers over his bushy eyebrows.
I don't know. A football party, huh?
You got something against football? I tease.
No, but I've received enough wedgies from football players that it's left me a bit scarred.
His mouth widens in a cheeky smile.
I've also received enough BJs from football players to make up for that.
I gasp. Ben, you bad boy. One, I didn't know you were gay, and two, we have something in common. We both like athletes.
We had other things in common before, he answers dryly. We're both fashion majors. We both love Chanel and Versace.
True. So, are you coming to the party or not?
Sure. What the hell? Do you need a ride?
Thanks, but I drove here too. I'm about to slide my hand in my purse to fish out my keys when I realize I'm not wearing my purse. I'd left it on the floor of the dressing area when Ben and I were folding up all the curtains. Nora had been helping at one point, too, but I don't know where she ran off to. She probably took off to avoid having to spend time with me. I'll see you at Rex's, I tell Ben.
Sexy Rexy,
he murmurs. Oh, God, please call him that to his face so I can see his reaction. He snickers.
If I think it'll get me a BJ and not a wedgie, I will,
he promises. Ben leaves, and I hop onto the runway and walk toward the backstage area, where I quickly grab my purse. Before I can leave, I hear a female giggle. I freeze, my gaze moving toward the corridor that leads to the Arbor House management offices. It also features a closet-sized bathroom that I used earlier tonight. Another giggle echoes from the corridor. I'm pretty sure it's Nora, and my eyes narrow at the shadowy doorway. Who the heck is she with? In a heartbeat, it dawns on me. Lori? I suddenly realize I never saw him leave tonight either. He just sort of disappeared from the party. Same way Nora disappeared in the middle of cleanup. I follow the giggles to the corridor and slant my head. Sure enough, a male voice. It's coming from the bathroom, and it's almost certainly Lori. Then Nora's muffled voice, followed by Lori again, as he says something that makes her laugh again. Good for her, I guess. She's had a crush on the creep since the first day of classes. Now she gets to live the creepy dream. I'm about to walk away
when I hear her cry out. It's not a scream of terror, but an exclamation of surprise, as if he startled her. But it's enough to make me walk toward the bathroom to check if she's all right. I remember the look of betrayal on Lori's face when I rejected his advances in his office. Granted, he released me the instant I said no. But he was also stone-cold sober that day, and on university property. Tonight I saw him drink at least 3 glasses of red wine. Plus, he was already in a snit because I thwarted his evil agenda. I wouldn't feel right if I left without making sure Nora is... Stop it! Okay, I heard that as clear as day. I reach the door just as the sounds of a scuffle echo behind it. A thud, as if someone bumped into something. A soft clatter, as if an item fell off the counter and onto the tiled floor. The soap dish, maybe? Nora's voice is firm. Stop it! I said no! And then I hear Lori's smarmy voice mutter, Cock tease! There's another crash. Nora cries out again, and I almost keel over with relief when I turn the knob and find the door isn't locked. Thank God. I throw it open and shout, Let her go! 33. Summer. Lori's hand is cupped between Nora's legs. Her hand is clamped over his as she forcibly tries to push it away. The sight turns my vision into a sea of red. I lunge at the professor, one arm slicing up and then down as I karate chop the back of his neck. He howls in pain and stumbles away from Nora. What the hell? He roars, angrily rubbing the spot that the side of my hand connected with. Oh, I'm sorry, I snap back. Am I interrupting something? My stomach churns when I notice the bulge in his pants. That bastard. I turn to Nora, whose face is ashen, her fingers quivering wildly as she tries to smooth the hem of her rumpled dress. Are you okay? I ask urgently. I'm fine. She doesn't sound fine. Her voice is weak, and her legs are visibly wobbling as she comes toward me. I wrap a protective arm around her trembling shoulders. The fact that she lets me tells me how shaken up she actually is. Of course she's fine, Lori says stiffly. I don't know what you think is going on right now, Summer, but Nora was not in any danger from me. Your hysteria, not to mention your ludicrous assumptions about what was happening, are not only insulting, but you also just left yourself open to an assault charge. I can't stop an incredulous laugh. You're going to have me arrested for assault? Are you kidding me? And I know exactly what was going on in here before I came in. Nothing untoward occurred between Nora and myself. Isn't that right, Nora? She doesn't respond. She simply shakes harder in my arms. You're disgusting, I hiss at our esteemed professor. You don't know what you're talking about, he spits out. You interrupted a consensual, intimate moment between me and a student, I finish in disbelief. Between you and a student, even if it was consensual, and it didn't fucking look that way from where I was standing, how is it in any way appropriate? His lips flatten in an angry line. I wait for a denial, an apology, anything. What I get is, I don't need to deal with this. I gape. Like hell you don't! But he's already storming off. Frantic footsteps reverberate backstage, then get softer and softer, until a door finally slams, and then everything goes silent. Nora's entire body is still shaking. Thank you, she whispers. Hey, it's no problem. I tighten my hold on her. She needs it. Otherwise, I suspect she'll topple over. But we need to go to the police now. Her head snaps up, the top of it nearly clipping my chin. What? Why? He would have raped you if I hadn't come along, Nora. You know that, right? Maybe not. But there's no conviction at all. She clears her throat, straightens her shoulders, and eases out of my embrace. He didn't rape me, though, and I know how this will play out. My mom's a public defender. It'll be my word against his. All he did was stick his hand between my legs. There's no bruises, no evidence of assault. There's me. I'm the evidence. I saw him groping you. I heard you say no, loud and clear.
Summer, you know there's no point, she says bleakly. The cops will give him a slap on the wrist. They probably wouldn't even charge him.
I have a sinking feeling she's right. I bite my lip as I work over our options in my head. There aren't many, but one rises to the forefront of my brain. I think I know who won't give him a slap on the wrist, I say slowly.
Who?
I take her hand and say, come with me.
We can't just show up at the dean's house, Nora hisses more than an hour later. She's in the passenger's seat of my Audi, and she's been protesting this course of action since the moment I told her.
We're not just showing up, I remind her as I drive through the wrought iron gates at the entrance of David Prescott's property. The dean lives in a gorgeous mansion in Brookline, a wealthy neighborhood outside of Boston. I'm pretty sure Tom Brady and Giselle live around here, too. I suddenly have a vision of Giselle jogging past the dean's house, noticing my fabulous outfit, and inviting me over to her house for a drink. Oh my God, that would blow my friggin' mind. Unfortunately, we're not here to celebrity sightsee. We're here to report an attempted sexual assault. My father called ahead to tell him we were coming. Remember? Because my dad is awesome. Never mind terrifying when he needs to be. And I guess Dean Prescott called in reinforcements as well, because he's not the only one waiting for us on the doorstep. Hal Richmond is with him, and he's the one who greets us.
Ms. Ridgway. Summer.
As usual, his accent contains a patronizing note.
What's all this about?
I let out a breath. Something happened tonight, and, well, Nora doesn't want to go to the police. But I told her I couldn't in good conscience let it go unreported. Prescott's eyes widened.
The police?
He opens the door wider and gestures for us to come inside. Nora shoots me a panicky look. I squeeze her arm. It's fine. I promise. As we follow the two men into a living room the size of my townhouse in Hastings, I dial my dad's number on my phone. He answers immediately. He's been waiting for my call. Hey, Dad, we just got here. I'm putting you on speakerphone. I glance at Prescott. Dean, you know my father. I hope you don't mind if he listens in. I see Richmond's lips tighten. I assume the word cloud in his snotty brain is now flashing preferential treatment. He can eat a dick. I know this is weird, but I'm from a family of lawyers, I explain to the men. I'm not allowed to have any important conversations without legal counsel. A chuckle floats out of my phone.
You got that right, princess.
Nora seems to be fighting a smile. I'm surprised when it actually breaks free and it's genuine. Family of lawyers? She murmurs to me. Me too. Look at that, I murmur back. And you thought we didn't have anything in common. Maybe if she'd given me a chance instead of assuming I was an airhead. We could have been friends, but deep down I know that will never be the case. I'm a super jealous person, and the fact that she went on one date with Fitz means I'll always want to claw her eyes out. But I also watched her almost get raped tonight, and I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. With Prescott and Richmond's rapt attention on me, I repeat the story of what happened tonight. Nora fills in her side of it, explaining how Lori bought her two drinks and flirted with her all night, until finally making his move after everyone had gone home. Both men wear murderous expressions when I mention where Lori's hand had been when I opened the bathroom door. So I karate chopped him and... There's a choked laugh from my dad. Daddy! I scold.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. It's just that you took karate for 3 months before you quit, and you were 12. I can't believe you still remember any of the moves.
I don't. Just that one, I admit.
Well, it came in handy tonight, he says,
and his pride practically pours out of the phone speaker. Anyway, I finish the story by admitting that this wasn't the first time Lori made a move on a student. Nora stares at me in surprise as I reveal. I had a meeting in his office, and he tried to kiss me. My father roars,
I'm going to kill-
Daddy! Hush!
You're a defense lawyer. You can't threaten to kill people. And he didn't push the issue when I told him I wasn't interested. Tonight he'd had a lot to drink, so maybe that contributed to his behavior. I leveled Prescott in Richmond with a stern glare. But he can't get away with it. We can't have someone like that teaching at Briar.
Absolutely not, Prescott agrees, while Richmond gives a grim nod. Don't worry, ladies. Briar will be taking swift action. And Nora, please remember you have access to counseling at the Student Health Center. I encourage you to take advantage of that.
She nods weakly. My dad speaks up.
As for contacting law enforcement, obviously nobody can force you to press charges, Nora. You need to do whatever you feel is right. However, should you change your mind, I will gladly serve as your counsel. Summer will give you my contact info. You can call me any time, day or night.
She bites her lip, her gaze slightly awed. Thank you, sir. Our late-night visit to the dean's house comes to an end. Nora and I thank them for listening, and as the men walk us out, I take my father off speakerphone and murmur, Love you, Daddy. Thank you.
Love you too, Princess. Oh, and by the way, I looked into that matter you'd asked about while I was waiting for your call. I didn't do it before because... Well, because your mom said it would be enabling your craziness.
Dad!
Her words, not mine. Blame Mom.
But you looked into what? I prompt. He answers with,
West Yorkshire.
I wrinkle my nose. West Yorkshire?
That's where the fellow you're overly interested in hails from. Leeds, West Yorkshire, England.
My gaze flies to Richmond, who's walking ahead of us. He's actually British? I can't even. Thanks for telling me, I say glumly. Love you. When we reach the front door, Richmond stops me from exiting by saying, Summer.
A word?
Summer. Damn it, I hate being wrong. I'll wait in the car, Nora says. I nod. I'll only be a minute. I wait until she's out of earshot before crossing my arms. What do you want?
To apologize. There's genuine remorse in his eyes. I've been behaving like a bit of a wanker, haven't I?
Just a bit, I say flatly.
I must confess, I went into our relationship with a hefty bias.
You think? He gives me a look.
May I continue?
Sorry.
I didn't grow up with money, Summer. I worked myself to the bone in order to attend university. As I wasn't offered a scholarship, over the years, I suppose, I developed a resentment toward people like you, the ones who come from wealthy families that can pull strings for them. I didn't get into my first choice uni. Nobody called in a favor for me.
He hangs his head.
I'm sorry for my behavior. And I'm especially sorry because you tried to warn me about Professor Laurie. You tried to tell me how uncomfortable he made you, and I dismissed those concerns.
Yes, you did. I can feel the disapproval radiating from my pores.
And you have no idea how deeply I regret that. It's ghastly enough what Ms. Ridgway endured tonight. But if something had happened to you because I'd ignored your claims,
he shudders.
I'm terribly sorry.
I exhale. It's done now, and I hope that in the future, if a student comes to you with these kinds of concerns, you actually heed them.
I will. I promise. And I also promise to be a little friendlier during our meetings.
He chuckles dryly. But please, don't expect me to transform into a warm and fuzzy creature overnight.
I am British, after all.
34. Fitz. I've been reduced to a basket case by the time I hear the key turn in the lock. It's nearly midnight. I left the party the moment Summer called to tell me what happened to Nora and that they were on their way to see the dean. I would have hopped in my car and met her there, but she insisted I stay home. Something about too many cooks in the kitchen. Apparently her father attended the meeting via speakerphone, which is a relief. I feel better knowing someone close to Summer was there to support her. Now I dive off the couch and take her in my arms before she can even shut the front door. I'm so glad you're back. I groan. Are you okay?
I'm fine.
She assures me. How's Nora? I ask as Summer unbuttons her coat.
She's fine too.
I karate chopped the bastard before he could do any real harm. I take the coat from her cold hands and hang it up for her. And the dean?
He said he'd take care of it.
You freaking better. There's still no chance of Nora going to the cops, though.
Even my dad said there's no point.
Summer runs both hands through her blonde hair.
I hate this world we live in, Fitzy, where shitty people can get away with shitty things.
I know. I say soberly. Shitty things do happen, but I'm confident Eric Laurie will face real consequences. Only last week I was reading online about three professors from major institutions who had been fired in the last month alone. One of them had even had tenure. Sexual harassment is a huge topic in the news these days. No way will Breyer let something as serious as this slide. I press my face to Summer's neck and breathe in my favorite scent on Earth, Chanel No. 5. The only scent a lady should ever own, someone told me once. I was worried when you told me what happened.
I was worried when I saw it happen.
She takes my hand and leads me toward the stairs.
Let's not talk about it anymore. I just want to take a hot shower and then get in bed and catch up on The Bachelor.
My mouth tips up in a wry grin. I never dreamed I'd fall for a girl who's into cheesy reality shows, ever. But luckily that's just one facet to Summer Hayward De Laurentiis. There is a plethora of other sides to her. The side that teases her older brothers, the side that adores her parents, the side that instantly becomes best friends with people, because she goes into every relationship with a full plate of trust. Other people remain guarded when they meet new people, but not Summer. Summer is trusting and open. And she's smart, in spite of her writing difficulties. Her vocabulary rivals mine. She listens to long-winded fantasy tomes on audiobook and actually discusses them with me. I've never had a girlfriend who could sit there and dissect Sir Nornan's journey to the Glass Forest and recite all the reasons he was stupid to use the Angel Sword, prematurely revealing its existence to the cave dwellers that protect the great beyond. So yes, Summer is everything. She's my muse. My sketches of her are already being transferred onto my computer to create the assets for the new video game I'm designing. She's my laughter because everything she says makes me laugh. She's my trigger because holy shit do we scream at each other sometimes. I never knew I was capable of expressing raw emotion. Didn't think I even had it in me. She's my desire because I can't take a step without wanting to be inside her. But most of all, she's my heart. I love you. I tell her as we walk down the hall to my room.
Love you too,
she whispers. Her gaze flickers briefly to Hunter's door. He's not home, I murmur, and I know we're both thinking about how much we hate that our roommate is still pissed at us. But Hunter will get over it, and if he doesn't, then I'll take that L. With a heavy heart, of course, but I've gained something I know can heal the pain of the loss. I've gained Summer. For the first time ever, I truly feel like I'm living life instead of hiding in the shadows. My folks can keep hating each other, but the next time one of them calls to spew their hatred, I'll make it clear that I don't want that negativity poisoning my life anymore, even if it means hanging up the phone. Hell, I had no qualms hanging up on a billionaire earlier. When I was waiting for Summer to come home from the dean's house, I did take the time to think about Kamal's job offer. And I've concluded that maybe he does need someone like me at Orcus Games. Someone who won't kiss his ass. Someone who'll tell him when he's being a jackass. So I'm toying with the offer, but I'll decide later. Right now, I want to take a shower with the woman I love and then climb under the covers and watch a silly reality show with her. You have the worst taste in television shows, I inform her as we enter my room. Her green eyes dance mischievously.
But you love me anyway, right?
I tug her toward me, my lips seeking hers. Yep. I give her a slow, teasing kiss. I love you anyway.
This has been an Audible Studios production of The Chase. Written by L. Kennedy. Performed by C.J. Bloom and Jacob Morgan. Executive producers Kristen Lang and Mike Charzik. Producer Chelsea Pita. Copyright 2018 by L. Kennedy. Sound recording copyright 2019 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.